The KM Football Podcast. Exclusive interviews with the biggest names in Kent football.
Welcome to this week's KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and as always, I'm joined in the studio by Steve Turvett of the KM Sports Desk. Our guest this week was a big presence on the pitch during his playing career, and since retiring, he's been making a big impact off it. The first of his three promotions came at Grayson and Northfleet, where he marked the longest spell of his career by lifting the Ryman League Championship. He also enjoyed success at Fisher and Bromley and reached several playoff finals, but is now putting something back into the game he loves. So let's take a trip down memory lane and look behind the scenes of non-league football as we welcome Francis Duku to the studio. Thanks for joining us, Francis. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Your days of battling centre forwards are over, sadly now. So what do you do with your time?
Fully run a service now called Our Game. I've set up a service to support non-league players and clubs, with a mainly around insurance and injury advice and support. But we're trying to be a holistic service that gives players and clubs somewhere to turn to get solutions to a lot of the problems we know exist, but most people haven't found an answer to as yet.
It's a fascinating project, and I guess it's become more than a project for you as well, isn't it? I guess it's become what you've devoted yourself to now since you stopped playing.
Yeah, no, definitely. I took redundancy from the city where I worked 6-7 years ago. And I just plunged into this full on. I'd been developing the idea in my mind for a good while. And then when the opportunity came up, had a decision to make, find another job or go full time with this and try and make it work. I thought this has to work. It just makes too much sense. So I went into it and I'm in it full time now.
What inspired you to go this way? Because, you know, a lot of ex-players or players, I should say, when they stop playing, they'll go to coaching, go to management, go to punditry, I guess, if you was a really good player. What inspired you to go down this route?
I'm a bit different to most. That's been over the time. But I thought about coaching, but I just, you know, I had this idea in my head from probably when I was early 20s, when I broke my leg, when I was playing for Gravesend, broke my leg at the time. And to get back from what I had, I managed to call on friends who had contacted at the top level, who were playing at a really high level, so they knew all the top people to see. And my job in the city at the time also meant I was fully insured for, you know, healthcare needs. So being able to put those two together helped me to recover from my injury quicker than I otherwise would have. And while recovering, I was reflecting on, you know, a lot of the players who I knew around me who didn't have any of these options, you know. I think I joined the PFA at the time as well. I'd been in the pro system as a youth player, but I joined again as a non-league member. And even the support available there wasn't what I needed, so I just saw I could piece together what I needed properly, and started to form an idea which, you know, 10-12 years on became reality for me. So I put it live, put my money where my mouth was and went live with it.
How did you go about doing that, turning an idea, a good idea, into what it is now and actually getting this thing off the ground?
A lot of stubbornness, because there's been a lot of times when I've looked at it and thought I've got to stop, just because it's taken a lot of time of much more energy than I thought it should do, because, you know, I do think it's a great idea, even if it's my company, you know, but there's been a lot of obstacles along the way. But just the belief in what I'm doing, because I still, from when I started off with the idea right the way through to now, the amount of case studies I see of people, players, clubs who are struggling because they don't know what to do, where to turn, and all of a sudden an injury, which should be something you can give you back from relatively quickly, turns into a long-term thing which costs the club money, costs players money, costs some time playing, and just alters people's lives. So we're just thinking, you know, it doesn't have to be this hard, doesn't have to be this bad. Let's do something about it.
So when a player picks up the phone to you, how can you help them?
So main thing is around injuries, but I don't always want to talk about injuries, because most players do think it's never going to happen to them, and you start to switch people off a bit if you're only talking about the negative side of things. So some things I've learned along the way, but main thing people do pick up the phone is about injuries. So we've got a fund which we, you know, we use with a provider. So there's an external provider who will run this for us, which gives everyone who joins access to guaranteed amounts of cash every year, and they can use that cash as and when they choose. So if they need to be able to get a scan or a consultation, get some private treatment, they're able to do that with this guaranteed cash, as opposed to paying for it themselves. Then we've also started tying in a lot of elite providers to work with us as well. So they will go and see the proper people, the best people, and they'll also benefit from discounted rates. So all round, it's a win-win. You know, we're basically saying join our service. If you get injured, we've got your back with cash, with providers, with discounts, And the unique thing which we've managed to set up now, we've morphed into over the 6 years I've been going, is that even if you don't get injured, you can actually still get your money's worth out of it. So it absolutely is a no-brainer. But we're just working hard to spread the word and help people to understand there is support that exists, and we are that support, and we've got a track record to prove it.
Give us an example then of a player with a problem and how our game has provided a solution.
I will talk about a Conference National player. Don't want to, go into exactly who it is in the club, but the club as a whole worked with us for a while. This player didn't know about us because where he came from, he'd come out of the pro game, got an injury which needed surgery. Basically, the club and him had a bit of a confusion over who had what in place. It's stuff which happens, but it's a conversation that hadn't been done, and we were able to quickly sort out his surgery, even after he'd been injured, just because we had some contacts in the right places to be able to pull this together. So now the club have saved themselves potentially X amount of thousands of pounds, the player as well, whoever would have paid for it. He's on his way back to rehabbing now, because it's a cruciate, so he's still going to be quite long term, but we've now got him the help he needs to get back playing as part of his membership fee. There is a fee, obviously everything has a price, but in terms of what he's taken out of it immediately as well, it's you could never argue. So that's at the extreme end, where there's been that big injury, cruciate. So we've got surgery, we've got rehab funding in place, they've got the facilities at the club as well to help him, so he will now be able to get back fit much quicker. At the other end, lower end of the scale, we've got, well, not even lower end, there's another player who lives in Midlands area, who's got the Gilmore's groin. He just needed it diagnosed. So again, with our contacts, we've been able to find someone in his area who is a leading specialist in the groin, Gilmore's groin. There's a new procedure which is put together. So A, we've put him in touch with the right specialist to be able to get this done quickly. B, with his membership, he's also got the funding, which also then means it gets paid for as well. He's not long had a baby. He's got clubs making offers, or had wanted to make offers to what you want to do next season. He can't commit or say anything until he knows what's happened with the injury. So we've massively, again, pushed that process along to help him get back to getting a deal and, getting football money again to support his work, to support his missus and baby and everything that goes with it.
So you've started this from scratch. What kind of a reaction have you had from players and clubs when you've been telling them about what you can offer and whether they want to come on board with you?
In the main, it's always been positive, but people have to jump on board rather than sit there, look at it and then decide after the event, can I help? Because the answer to that is basically no, or it's limited what we can do. And there are more and more conditions going on with it, because as we get bigger, the provider does have more requirements for us to be able to keep doing that. Without a doubt, players, I did a lot of research with them at the time. I've got quite a wide network of contacts as players. A lot of people knew me, I knew them. I reached out and I asked all the right questions, did a lot of research, and all of them were, yep, sounds great, we'll do it. Then it became, at the start anyway, right, we're here. All the things you said you wanted, we've actually done it. We've got all those things ticked off. You ready to join us? Yeah, okay, I'll come back to you a bit later. That kind of initial reluctance, because it was new, I suppose. We've now built up a track record. I think anyone who speaks to our game members, there's more than enough who'll be able to tell you we do what we say. As with everything, there'll be some who will expect more or ask for more, but we're quite clear and transparent. This is what we can do. This is what, sort of options are available. You then make the decisions to be, do what parts you want, we'll give to you. The reaction, it's now more and more people, because they've seen the track record, that they've seen their mates who've been helped and who have been, don't sound too, egotistical here, but saved by what we've got on offer. It's just growing all the time. Club-wise, we want to improve that. We definitely want to improve that. I know a lot of people at clubs, again, through playing, who they call on me as a favour, when they feel they need to, but that's not a way I can run a business, and that's not a way a club, I'm not tell people how to run clubs, but you can't expect that as a long term. So we're trying to establish something where clubs can always call on us properly to help their players. Then the club wins, the player wins, and all round everyone's protected.
I put two things to you. One of the things that strikes me is that if I was a player back in the day that I would have thought my club have got that insurance in place, or the county have got that insurance in place. Is that something that you've come across where it's not in place, or if whatever it is not really going to help the player in the immediate short term, and maybe these things take time? Is that the way you've found it?
I would say what's in place just doesn't help the player in the football sense, for sure. So the county FA insurances, for example, I don't know how many players actually know they have some recourse to the, you know, county FA for insurance or some kind of benefit. But then also there's the issue of what it actually covers. So a lot of those will cover, different FAs have different, you know, policies. Different clubs also have different policies, depending what league you're in and what the minimum requirements of the league are, etc. But most of them will generally cover them for loss of salary if they can't work. Doesn't cover them for loss of salary if they can't play football, doesn't cover them for operations, doesn't cover them for private treatment. You know, these are the kind of things which we've got already in place. And also there's this process most have of you have to get seen by a GP and get signed off. You know, there's a lot of extra red tape and issues to jump through, which we don't have because of the product and the nature of what we've managed to put together. So we've gone over and above, you know, what that minimum in place. I think the FA, the FA have a rule where all 11-a-side players do have to have a minimum level of insurance. But that minimum level, again, through speaking to some people who've used it, has ended up with some players being offered £25 a week when they've torn their Achilles. That's the level which the insurance has covered. You know, and I'll challenge anyone, if you can live on £25 a week, let me know, because I'm doing something really wrong. You know, whereas it's really cheap what they've got, but at the same time, it's the benefits you get are reflected in that. What we do costs more, but for what we give you, it's also very, very cheap. Definitely very cheap. The difference is, I say, for anyone looking and considering it, is check our track record with it. You know, there's enough proof out there that what we're charging, what we're delivering, does stack up, because we've been doing it for 5 straight 6 years now.
It's interesting as well that you've mentioned clubs a couple of times already. Is that a definite area where you see it? And is that also from your own experience where clubs are not necessarily switched on to the way they should be in this regard? That, you know, we all know about the stories of non-league clubs, particularly paying out silly money for players and doing this, that and the other. Whereas you must look at it sometimes, I think, player knocks on your door, says, oh, this has happened. And you're thinking, well, look at the club, they're paying out such a big wage bill. And why didn't they just put a little bit of money aside for something like this?
I don't entirely blame the clubs. I have to be clear on that, because I know of players and clubs likewise. And part of some of the reasons been given to me, clubs have talked about, we want players, you know, to do certain things and protect themselves as well. But ultimately, it's the player's choice. And there is a fear, you know, some conversations I've had, there is a fear of, if we don't give him what he wants, he'll go somewhere else for that money, you know, because he just wants the money in his pocket. Everyone's got their own reasons, their own motivations for what they, you know, they want to spend their money with. And it's like, we're not going to tell them how to, you know, spend their money. If they earn what we've agreed, they earn it, they can, you know, make their decisions. As adults, I fully get that. I think the problem, though, for me is, if you're in and around football, player, club, whatever else, you know, a couple of things will happen. You'll have some bad decisions against you. You'll lose some games which you should have won. You'll win some games you should have lost. People will get injured. You know, it's guaranteed. And if you go into the season every year knowing these things are going to happen, but you don't do what you can to protect against, you know, what you can protect against, I don't know how much you can, you know, point to anyone else and say, well, they should have done this, or that, you know this is happening. We've got a solution, which even if at first you didn't particularly want to pay too much attention to, the track record is there for, you can't argue against what the players and, you know, clubs who've engaged with us are doing. So we're trying to not lecture people, because everyone's an adult. You know, we're just saying, look, here's an option. We've got this option. If you want to work with us and protect yourselves as clubs, you want to protect, look after the welfare of your players, as, you know, before you get to this GoFundMe campaign and the fundraisers and things, which again, to me, is a crazy way of a player having to look after his family or his lifestyle. You know, it's a great gesture by a club and by fans to raise him a grand or a couple of grand or whatever, especially in this climate, if people can raise that kind of money for you, it's a great gesture. But if your mortgage is already £1,500, you know, per month, and you've got your bills, and that gesture's gone within the first month, what happens then month two when you're still in plaster, or your knee's still, you know, in a brace because you're recovering from surgery? Something better is needed, and through our expertise, as our dedication, our sacrifice, we've put it together.
You're talking about the examples you've given of being conference national players. Do you go lower down? How low do you go? Would you go to county league level?
We go down to Sunday league because the risks are the same for everyone. We have there's a misconception from some clubs we've gone to or players we've gone to. They say, I don't earn any money for playing football, so I don't need this because I'm not getting paid. Okay, well, so if you still have something bad happen, so let's say, again, hope it doesn't wish it on anyone, not wish it on anyone at all, but if you used to break your leg playing Sunday league or playing for a conference national club, you still can't go to work. So at a conference national, you'll have had two incomes, possibly. Conference South would have had two incomes. And a Sunday league, you've only got your one income, but that's what you potentially lose all of. So surely you want to protect yourself against that. You know, it's not going to be, well, because you break your leg at, you know, conference national, it's going to be a more serious break than you breaking your leg on a Sunday afternoon because someone who potentially has been out the night before, is a bit angry. I don't know, it's just, don't make generalisations about it, but these are things which we know happen. All of a sudden, you've got your life turned upside down because you haven't got any option around you to protect yourself. So regardless of the level, we're just saying, have a look, have a think, protect yourself.
I think it's a great idea in the way you've gone about it. And it's a fascinating story, but were there times at the start where you thought, oh, I don't know if I should be doing this. What have I let myself into?
At the start, no. At the start, it was all excitable for me because I'd left work. You know, I wasn't in the rat race anymore. All the while playing non-league, I had spent time working in the city. So, you know, it was, I think the last job I was at, I'd spent a good period of time having to be in behind my desk at 6 a.m. And not leaving till 9 p.m. sometimes. You know, so those, what we're talking, 12, 15-hour days really, really took its toll. Now, all of a sudden, I've created this opportunity where, to be honest, the first couple of months, I was waking up at 10 a.m. most days just because I could. I thought, doesn't matter now, I couldn't. I'll start working after. And then while the idea was forming and the groundwork was being, you know, put in, it was all, you know, quite light-hearted, but there wasn't that pressure around it because I'd not long come out of work. I'd planned things, I'd set things up behind me. And it was just, look, enjoy a bit of life, but you're doing what you want to do is working in football again. Then it became into, I think, maybe year two of it, really, where I hadn't taken the numbers which I expected to have. Everyone who sets up a business does think it's the best idea in the world. I genuinely still do think this is, you know, the best idea for non-league football. But it was all the people who promised me that they would do it, you know, when my research and my, you know, checking out, well, what would you want? What would you do? If I did this, would you sign? A lot of them had suddenly gone quiet. And I'm thinking, have I made a mistake here? Have they wasted my time? Have I, you know, I've got a young family. I've got all sorts going on. Is this really the right thing for me to have done? But there's a real belief that what has been put together really will work because the people who've used it, the feedback from them is generally second to none. It's just as the word needs to get out more and more and people need to be more aware of what it is, and literally how much of a no-brainer it is. You know, you put a bit of money in, you take all of it out every year, regardless, because of the way it's structured. If you get injured, you take even more out. If you need the help and the expertise, you get that as well. If you refer us on to people, we give you free boots. If you play well end of the season, we've given out more boots. You know, we've got all kinds of stuff which are going on around in and around the service, which we're just saying to people, if you actually don't need any of this, you know, you tell me your secret, because I'll stop all of this and I'll try and buy into what you're doing, or at least don't be selfish and share it with your, you know, the other million plus people who play 11-a-side football every week, because they need to know whatever it is you've got. We're trying to share that message. And if you've got a better solution, which you're keeping to yourself, you're a real selfish kid, you know. That's my way of looking at it.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
Very, very clear how much passion you've got for this and still do to drive something like this on over the course of 6-7 years. How much was that born out of your own personal experience, having been in the position that players are in today, being a part-time footballer with a serious injury?
Yeah, it was massive. So because I was able to call on friends and had that set up with, you know, my career, my work away from football, I knew I was lucky. I was always, you know, reasonably well-respected player at all my clubs. I did well for most clubs I played for, so I was always one of those players who was looked after. It's just the way the world, what the players' clubs want, will get more favourable treatment. You know, you're more of an asset to them until you're not anymore. And, you know, it's just how football works. We all know that. But in my time, as I was always that kind of player, I was always looked after. So I was a big voice. So a lot of people would always speak to me about some of the problems which they had, saying it really struck home when I needed to use it myself and how quick I was able to go through this, you know, the process of it all. And then when I heard other people again, other, you know, oh, how do we do this or what's happened there? It just really, I don't know, maybe opened my eyes massively to there's a lot of things which could be more easily done just with a bit of thought, you know, behind it. It's turned out to be a lot of thought. You know, it's been 6 years worth of thinking, but we've moved it all the way to where we are today, which is much better than we were 6 years ago. But what we offered 6 years ago was much better than what was available 6 years before that. So the progression just keeps going on.
How did that injury impact on you, not just financially, but, you know, your life, your career?
At the time, I was doing really well. So playing for Gravesend, Ebbsfleet now, obviously. There's a lot of interest in me from the Football League. I decided to be too clever, try to clear a ball in a way I shouldn't have, tried to do an overhead kick, basically. Landed really badly, ended up with a broken ankle, and I never was the same again after. But that's my own kind of hard luck story. Every player's got their own story, but timing was awful for me. And then I still managed to play reasonably well, you know, at other clubs after. Did still achieved a few things, but before that I was happy with how I was playing. I was very, you know, confident. I was doing well, turning up at clubs, playing games, and people were, you know, you're up against him today, you've got, you know, just that kind of thing, which, and, you know, just told me I was doing quite well at the time. Just the timing was awful, and the seriousness of the injury was, you know, enough as well to change the way things went for me after. But say everyone has their own hard luck story, so you just kind of get on with it.
So did you feel at that point that you were going to make it as a league player?
Feedback was yes. I was playing non-league, I'd say, confident of whoever I played against. I never at that time would have gone onto a pitch thinking I'm up against him today. It was always okay, well, whoever it is, let's play. And I was aware there were a few people who would go on the pitch saying, oh, I'm up against Francis, you know, it's that kind of thing. So my confidence was high. I did think, yes, the only way I was going was back into the league, back to a league club, I should say. And yeah, I did believe it would happen, but it clearly wasn't meant to be. So yeah.
But in spite of that, the time that you had with Gravesend and Northfleet, I'd say, was overall a positive experience for you. How much did you enjoy being at that club?
Best part of my career, to be honest. I stayed there the longest. Any club I played at, I think I did change clubs. I never really changed during the season, but end of year I did, you know, change club a few times, played for quite a few. Gravesend, I stayed there for the longest and it was my most successful. Enjoyed playing there. Team spirit there was second to none. Really was second to none. Had some proper people as well as proper players there as well. Players as well who I really thought would have gone into the league as well. No disrespect to some of the people doing it now, but back then, to get a move from non-league into the league, you had to play well for, you know, 18 months, you know, maybe even 2 years to get the chance. Now you've got people being given the chance a lot sooner, which is a good thing because the quality is there. It's just, I also look back and think, as much as I think I would have thought I was worth my chance in the league, there were other players at the club at the time who definitely would have been as well.
Who are we talking about?
Rob Owen, we played with there, centre mid. Jimmy Jackson, absolute wonder of a left foot, club legend. Players as well like Matt Lee, he'd come out of Charlton, I think, when he was a YTS player, but as a right back, best I've ever played with. You know, there was Chase Dadda up front, was always worth a goal. He's a, you know, we had good players all around. Some of the players who did play with me there did go in into the league. Liam Hatch, he was, let's just say, a real pain to play against. Arms, legs, everything, and he would head your foot if it meant it. He would put his head where players just, you know, just wouldn't. Andy Drury had a good career. He came when he was a youngster, came from Sittingbourne, quiet as anything, but so much ability.
We had him in on the podcast, and we talked about that stage in his career when he was just breaking through, a little bit of a, quite quiet as you say, but a bit of a cheeky youngster in training,
yeah,
like the odd nutmeg. Did you ever fall foul?
Not that I remember, but if I did, I'd more than likely have kicked him back. But he was a good guy. He came in and I think me and the guy called Rob Hayworth, if I don't remember him. Rob Hayworth especially spent a lot of time around him and helped bring out his character, I think. And that then just helped his football, because as he ability was there, but as he became more confident around the old, you know, the players at level and the older players, more and more of it came out, and you just knew he'd do well. He was, you know, there was good players there at the time. He did actually go on to have a good career though as well, so fair play to him.
And it was a squad in 2002 which went on to win a league title, and these things don't come around that often in a career to lift a trophy like that. So how special was that season for you?
Really special. I think personally I was double player of the year for Gravesend that year as well, so I knew I'd done well as a team. Just happy to have done it with that group, because that a really good group of boys there. We weren't fancied to do it. At the time, Canvey Island with Jeff King, and they had some, I mean, they'd signed league players, you know, people had left the league to come and play for them. And we were, you know, we were like the little boys who were punching above our weight massively, but we had players who were obviously worth punching, you know, who were able to do that. But to beat them to the title that year was really satisfying, just because no one really expected us to do it. I think the first couple of games, or first three or four games, we had a bad start, and then once we hit our stride, we just kept going. And it was the style of the manager, Andy Ford, who was quite relentless, you know. We wouldn't have always been the prettiest on the eye, for sure, but we knew how to win games, we knew how to get together, we knew how to perform at the right times, and it just went on and on to have a great season collectively. So all round, it was good, really good memory.
What did you make of Andy as a manager?
I liked him. Played my best football under him. I think he's a throwback to a different kind of manager than what you'll definitely have now. Over the time, I've gone on to play for a lot of different managers who've done, you know, different things with it, which if Andy had some of that, it would probably been more effective. But for what we had at the time, he knew what he wanted. He got it across to people what he wanted. And that's a key thing as a manager, to be able to get your point across, everyone understand, and everyone to want to execute it and, you know, and do it. He had at the time Phil Hanford as his assistant. Top man. It became the almost, and a good cop, bad cop. You know, Phil was just always there with the jokes and the banter. And Phil was a player as well, was really, really good. Really good player. See, even when we did training games, five-a-side, seven-a-side, whatever, Phil would join in and you could just see his round the corners, his touch, everything. And then he'd probably be one who'd make someone and make everyone have a laugh about it as well, you know. But as a pair, they worked really well. And the effectiveness of it, say, was such that I don't know exactly what Canvey were on. I know a few of the players who played at the time and what they said, but they'd have been as a squad. You know, we were guessing things like 4 or 5 times, you know, what we were earning. I'm being generous there. So to pull that together, and they had good players as well, players out of the league. So to pull that together against high-level players with bigger salaries, and to get us to outperform them over the course of the season, yeah, was
that something you used as motivation, that underdog thing? You know, they're paying this much and we're kind of the not-so-fancied side?
Didn't really talk about their money, but more about the not-so-fancied. You know, it's kind of, we used to get in and get into games and things, and it'd be, right, we're going to do this again today, you know. Andy would never give us a day off training. Never. So wherever the... I mean, if you think back to what the pitches were like, you know, back then, you know, I remember playing at Stonebridge Road and you're going out a couple of times, you put your foot in and the mud's over your ankles and things like that. And we used to... I think I remember one time on round about Christmas, we trained in a park, which if you shot and missed, you was getting the ball back from next to a graveyard. That's the kind of thing. Andy's like, where's the grass? Where can we go? Right, we're going to, you know, get there. Trained in school sometimes, just because there was literally a hall which he had available. And I think we remember one time, I think we were doing almost bench ball. We had a big game on Saturday, but you just to get people in, getting the touches of the ball, getting the sweat on, we just go on all the time. And it was just kind of, look, we've got to just keep going. We've got to keep going. And he got it in to everyone that people did enjoy coming. You get there, you never moan. What's this again? Oh, what, you know, whatever the case. Players moan. Just have it right, players moan, you know. But he kept us going and we enjoyed it.
We've talked before on the podcast about the Canvey games, the one away, obviously, when the lights went out.
The one just after I scored, by the way.
Well, yeah. You can talk about that in a moment, Francis. And also the one at home, obviously, when it was a more than a sellout, shall we say, at Stonebridge Road.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, we can talk about that, Henry, yeah.
What were your recollections of those two matches?
So the one, I mean, I was with Steve Ward last week or the week before, we'd gone on another Middlesex Wanderers tour. So one of the things I first did at Gravesend, and I've always stayed involved with the club, great club, what they do, you know, what they give players opportunities to do. And we were talking about this game. So the 2-0 at Vares, they'd just had their FA Cup game against someone, which they'd lost, I think third round or second round. It was a big game for them. And the game had been rearranged because of previous fixtures, and they'd been arranged for the midweek after the FA Cup. Steve was saying, you know, the thing was dead all this. They said after the game, Jeff King's come in and apologised, said he shouldn't have arranged it for then because they'd been on that high, the FA Cup running, and they had such an important game, you know, to come after. But we went there, remember it was a Tuesday night, and we did well, we played well, we had went 1-0 up early on, or for at least relatively early on. I made it 2-0, and then the lights went, you know, everyone was kind of, hey, surely not, but anyway, I don't know what happened, but the lights went. Came back on, because I think there was a bit of talk of game has to be abandoned or whatever else. We're 2-0 up, I think 60 minutes gone, something like that, and no, there's no way we're stopping this game now. Top of the table clash, we're 2-0 up. We've come to Canvey. I live in South East London, players live East London, you know, all over. It's a long way for us to come. We're part-time football. We are finishing this game. Did manage to finish. Remember, they lost, they started losing their heads a bit. I think Mark Stimpson at the time got sent off as well. Something silly, really, really silly. But we held on, you know, and won comfortably, you know, that day. And so we've gone back, really, I think, after that game with the real buzz of, yeah, we've got a chance here. We really have got a chance of winning this league. Then the game at Stonebridge Road, as you say, the sellout, which was sold out. I mean, I remember the atmosphere there was crazy. You know, we've gone out. It's the best atmosphere I've had as a non-league player, especially because the ground was really close, you know, and it's full to the brim over. You could see the crowd, hear the crowd, feel the crowd, you know, and if I can't imagine what it feels like to play in front of, you know, Champions League or whatever, thousands of thousands, but that atmosphere there was really, really good, you know, especially for non-league. They won 1-0, and I think there was a lot of motivation from them to revenge that 2-0 defeat. I remember Neil Gregory scored. Again, another really, really good player. Really good player. No business playing at that level, but playing at Canvey was local. He earned what he needed to. He didn't really want to be, you know, travelling up and down in the league for less money. I understand why, but ability-wise, no business there. Scored, and we just couldn't get back in it. We just couldn't get back in it. And I think after that game, there's probably a bit of doubt as to, are we actually going to go through this? But this is again one of Andy Ford's good things at the time, was he quickly dealt with that, got the team thinking positively again the right way, and we kicked on again, and yeah, went through. But two games that I will remember from a non-league career for, yeah, definitely.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
Away from the pitch, how did you first get involved with Kick It Out?
Mainly once I started the Our Game side, really, because once I'd left work to do Our Game, I wanted to find other ways to support myself as well. Again, one of the things I say, being that bigger voice in the changing room, or even on the pitch, you know, there were times fans would shout stuff at teammates and whatever, and I would react, but I could help the player, or, you know, maybe to an extent shut the fan up as well. There was a lot of stuff which I'd experienced around that, you know, issue racism, and, you know, being able to just be more aware of different ways to handle it. So with the time on my hands and the opportunity to do this, you know, supportive work for Kick It Out, I can't remember how the opportunity came up, but a friend of mine must have been who did work with them as well, and, you know, said, look, just get involved, there's stuff going on, they need people around. And just with my influence and things like that, I got involved and just tried to support the work they were doing, because obviously I do believe in it, I do want to support it. And spent time then, I think we ended up going into Football League clubs, Premier League clubs, delivering workshops, helped part of my transition from sitting behind a desk all the time, I was then speaking to players all the time in and with our game. It then became about how I used those skills to then also deliver the messages which I needed to, but with my awareness and my experiences as a player around that issue of racism as well, just being able to help put it in words or in a way that younger players would understand. It kicked off from there. And so I spent 3 or 4 years really doing quite a fair bit of with the organisation.
So playing, was it something that you encountered quite a lot, either things that were said directed to yourself or other people on the pitch?
I wouldn't say quite a lot, but there were instances for sure. I had a couple of times I remember of players who said things to me directly in the game. But it was always the, let's say, older players who thought they could put me off my game. Red mist would come, but their intention was to hit them or something obvious and get sent off. And I was a bit cleverer than that, I'd like to think, because I never did it. So I would always, though, challenge it fully. And, you know, I'm not suggesting people go around having fights or whatever, but if you really don't, you know, you want to do that kind of conversation with me, you don't have to, you know, hide on the pitch and do it. You can speak to me after. I'll even come to you. I'll make it easy as possible for you. You can, you know, have that chat with me then. And always it was, no, I didn't mean it. It's just, there's nothing, I didn't mean it. Which, to me, it just, it sums you up. That's the kind of person you are. If you think that's all right to do because you want to score a goal, I can't waste my time on you. If you really don't like me, you want to do something about it, let's do it with me instead of a younger person who, you know, couldn't stand up for himself as much. I'll be able to handle myself. So I'll give you your option. If you really want to do it, take it. If you don't, seriously, shut up and leave everyone alone, because no one needs that from you. Some of the clubs have played against, there were some fans who shouted some stuff. But again, it's people who, you know, you've paid money to come and watch football, and your belief is that you're able to shout what you want at me because you've paid £10 or £12. I respect myself more than your £10 or £12. So I'll give you back your money and I'll do what I, you know, say what I want back to you, if that's the way you want to, you know, you want to do it. But it was always, again, it's kind of the expectation. The expectation fans have of players can be really unrealistic. You know, this belief that you can come to a game and shout what you want at people, whether it's about racism, whether it's about, you know, I've heard people shout stuff about people's family, people's kids. You know, there's people who've made a mistake, you know, whatever the, you know, things may be. You understand when you play that you're putting yourself in the spotlight to a degree, especially the higher up you go. But at the same time, the only thing that really should be justified is if you can be criticised about your ability, not the way you look or whatever the things, you know. There's people at times, they've had their family in the stands and people are shouting things about, you know, your missus, your wife, your mum, whatever the case may be, and they could be stood in the stand there. You've paid £15 and you think that gives you a right to do that. I can never, you know, get that. Then I see people with kids holding their kids and shouting this kind of stuff, and you're thinking, well, what's your kid going to grow up to do? You know, it's not behaviour you would accept anywhere else, but because you play football, people say, oh, you just have to be professional. Well, really, you're not even professional, you're semi-pro at that level, so I'd only take half of it. But at the same time, even if you are professional, whatever, it's still, let's just do things the right way. You know,
you might not even be able to answer this question, but as you touched on there, this is something which only really seems to happen at football grounds. Why is that?
I think this is just my personal view. Football attracts people from every walk of life, and for so long people have been allowed to just do what they want. At most other sports, you know, the one that springs in my head is rugby, you know, because rugby is the other big, you know, popularity sport, which also gets people from a range of walks. But most people there is almost a code of conduct which people have understood for years. You know, there's almost, you'd rugby, you're playing against people who will almost punch you in your head, but at the end of the game, without a doubt, it's going to shake your hand, it's going to have a beer, you know, that kind of thing. Whereas football, there's always been more of a, in my view anyway, an ego thing which has gone on, which has always carried on over and above, and that's just transmitted out. But because you get people from so many different walks of life, you get some good, a lot of good, let's be fair, there's a lot of good, a few bad, and then the ability to copy while you can hide in those bigger crowds is easier done. You know, I look through the kick it out stuff and, you know, work we've done around there, you look at some of the stuff where people have been charged or named and shamed in the papers for racism and things, and, you know, you get all the Oh, I don't know what came over me. Oh, he's not that kind of person. Oh, I mean, he's a really lovely guy, really. He takes little old ladies across the road all the time, whatever the case may be. But you can see clear as day in the footage, face is twisted with rage. It's just kind of, I'm doing this because I'm in the crowd. No one identifies me. But when you're identified, all of a sudden, I'm really, really sorry. You know, once the mob mentality's gone, changes a lot of people's behaviour.
Having been within the Kick It Out organisation from then until now, in terms of your playing days, do you think progress has been made? And I ask that because even this season, I've written stories about players on the pitch who have been abused because of the colour of their skin.
Well, you know, again, just the couple of stories I've been aware of that with just Ebbsfleet, Nathan Ashmore has had a few, you know, instances. So it's clear examples of there are still instances of this kind of this behaviour. Definitely progress has been made because I'd say it's less obvious than it ever has been. But at the same time, it's still happening a lot. It's just because it's less obvious doesn't mean it's not happening. Sound a bit old maybe, but things like with the internet now and your Twitter and things like that, I see some stuff which go on there which is, you know, you look at it and it's like, this cannot be right. It cannot be right. Someone, for the sake of it, just writing the most offensive things they could think of because they can do it behind the screen. But it happens loads. Some of the work I do still, I'm involved with some stuff for the FA where I'm seeing stuff happen at other levels where there are lots and lots of instances of this kind of abuse still going on. People do still think it's all right until they get caught, and again it becomes, we're really sorry, we didn't mean it, you didn't mean it, you're just sorry you got caught, and that's the big difference.
It's the obvious, but it's a simple question in a way. What's the solution? Is, you know, you've heard all things about stadium bans, deduct points off clubs and all these various different things, but it's been going on for so long, and granted that you think there's progress being made, but it keeps happening. So how do we stop it happening?
Yeah, so when I say progress, I say there's less of it happening, but you know, it's still miles away from where it needs to be, without a doubt. There's absolutely no way I could sit there and say I think it's, you know, in a good place, because it basically isn't. How could it be stopped? For the last 20 odd years, you'd like to, you know, Kick It Out, Show Racism, Red Card, you know, another organisation I've worked with on that. The view has been around education. To really change someone's behaviour, you need to get them to understand it's wrong and want to change their behaviour. So I can understand that perspective for sure. But then there's also some people who you're never going to change, you know, so you're never going to educate them out because they don't want to. There'll be something too long in the tooth with it, but there'll be something just really don't care. They have a view. Now, you can have your view, I can have my view, but we can also then be, you stay over there, I stay over there. Let's do that if you don't want to change. I don't need to be your friend, you don't need to be my friend. But then to stop the behaviour, to stop them coming in with it, they have to feel pain of something, they have to lose something themselves. So this whole thing about the points, deductions, is the most obvious thing I can see at the moment. Stadium bans wouldn't really affect them because they'll just go to another stadium, you know, and watch it. But whereas on the points, if it's their team that they generally are supporting and their team loses out, then the people, because if you're shouting racist abuse, someone next to you is going to hear, you know, the group of them will hear. So soon enough, people will be able to identify, well, you, you're the ones doing it. You've just cost us, you know, 9 points or whatever. You stopped us getting promoted or cost us to get relegated. We will then, you know, make sure you don't come. I'm not saying you should go and fight them or whatever, but just identify them and make sure they can't come around. Let them go and do that behaviour somewhere else if they really want to do it, because if you do the same thing on the street, you get arrested. So go and get arrested, you know, if you really believe it that much, go and get arrested.
Can you see the day when a team or players from a team walk off a pitch due to this?
Oh yeah, definitely. There's definitely
At non-league level as well as league level.
Yeah, I think it gets to a stage of people are close to, you know, really just having enough. So what do you do next? Do you keep turning up and taking it, or do you think, let's try something different and, you know, and see what happens? Now, for the walk-off to be effective, if it does happen, you would have to have everyone get involved. But is it the right thing to do? I can't speak for someone else, because if they feel that's how they want to protect themselves against it, my view is it's your choice, you know. Problem you have then is those, let's say, people who may then try and instigate something just to create that walk off, whatever situation, you know, there's a lot of devious people out there, but there are genuine reasons for people to want to do this. It's not a straightforward answer, really, but I'm aware of people who would be prepared to just say, look, I'm not playing until that gets sorted. So however that looks, of people above need to, you know, pay attention to it.
When you talk about expectations, unrealistic expectations on players in terms of things that are said or shouted and how you should react to that, I mean, again, you have personal experience, not just of verbal abuse, but it crossed a line, it got physical. One game that you played, a playoff final, you're playing for Kingstonian,
yep,
away at Boreham Wood, and someone comes down to the front of the terrace and lashes out at you from what I've seen. What are your sort of recollections of that?
He actually came on the pitch. I think, if I remember rightly, ball's gone in to the Boreham Wood keeper. I've gone in for challenge. He's low down. I've gone in with my feet. He's got there first. And there's a little bit of, people call it handbags or whatever, there's a little bit of that. And then, as I'm kind of still, I say, arguing or focus on the keeper, see at the corner of my eye, someone's come on the pitch and walking towards me, and he's attempted a lash out. In all honesty, it was pathetic. It didn't cause any damage, but it, just to say, it couldn't have. You know, if it had been someone bigger or someone who had connected or whatever, it could have been. My first reaction was stunned. I can't actually believe this has happened. Then I got, you know, someone just punched me. You know, they kind of reacted to that. I'd say, luckily, happily, in hindsight, there are enough people around to have then got me, got him, and, you know, marched him off. But the punishment for him, if that's the word, was just he got police caution. You know, he just got a police caution. If I had jumped over into the stand and done something back, I'd have got a lot more than the police caution, you know. So that kind of thing just doesn't add up. If I'd have gone into the stand, all the fans around would have been that thug who's player who's, you know, done whatever. But if a fan has jumped on the pitch and done it, I remember a lot of people at the time were laughing, you know, in the stand. Like, thought it was funny. But if I'd have caught him and hurt him, you know, all of a sudden it's not funny, but I'm the bad, you know, it's all that kind of double standard in some people's minds, not everyone, some people's minds, which you've got to just, in me, my mind, say, you've got to, let's be real here, let's do this properly. If you want people to play and to respect you, you've got to respect them, you know, as well. So someone jumping on and trying to punch me is not funny. I've got a lot of, you know, say, banter from other players, oh, how'd you let a person punch you, blah, 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 but, you know, you have to laugh it off because it was, in hindsight, something I looked at and thought, this is pathetic. But at the time, yeah, I was...
Did it impact the rest of the game, do you think?
I spent a bit of time after angry, without a doubt, because it was still, has this actually just happened to me? That kind of thinking. Alan Dowson, who was my manager at the time, at Kingstonian. So I got beat by Ryan Moran for the second goal. He got above me for a header, which made it 2-0 and they won. So he always gives me a bit of, let's say, a friendly reminder that I should have won the header or whatever. Ryan was a big guy as well, by the way. I mean, he sadly passed away a few years ago. Played for Boreham Wood, centre-half. But it's one of these things which, you know, at the time you're thinking, if I hadn't been, that hadn't happened, would I have timed it better? Would I have been, I don't know, you maybe almost it's an excuse from my side, maybe. But it definitely didn't help, you know, is one thing I'm sure of. Whether it stopped me, you know, dealing with other things in the game better, I don't know, but it definitely didn't help.
Was there like an atmosphere in the ground that day, or was it just a complete out-of-the-blue moment?
No, I think there was a... From what I understand, and this is just some of the things which have been fed back, there were, because it was the player finals, a bank holiday, there were a load of fans who weren't Boreham Wood fans who turned up to the game. They were quite loud, were drinking and doing all sorts in the stands, and the feedback or the word is this guy was one of this extra group. You know, he apparently wasn't, you know, associated with the club. He'd come along, big game, let's, you know, have his day out with a group of people, and he got involved with what he did. After the game, when they'd won, there's a kind of mini pitch invasion, which you get at a lot of clubs. And remember, there was quite a few fans who'd actually come on the pitch as well, who were also trying to just get reactions from other Kingstonian players, you know, running up to people and fingers in their faces and things like that. Just, again, it's you're a fan, your team's won, you're happy, but if someone's run up to you in the street and starts sticking their fingers in your face, you're going to have a word back. So why do you think it's okay just because you're at football? No one reacted, you know, everyone was disappointed with what had happened. We lost the playoff, we thought we'd be getting promoted, we hadn't, just wanted to get off the pitch. But kind of, I remember one guy in particular was holding his son, who could only have been 6 or 7, and he's ran up to, it must be me, or ran close to me, his fingers out, all kinds of language going off, and thinking, you got your son in your arms, why would you do that? But some people decide they want to, that's what they go to football for, and they expect you to put up with it. But no, it's not okay. It's not okay.
Go back to some of the instances of today, and given your role or roles in the game that you've had in the past 5 or 6 years, Francis, have you spoken to these players that have been involved in some of these instances this season? And what's the feedback being? And secondly to that, almost, is there almost, or does there need to be a better support mechanism for those players as well?
Well, again, that's part of what we offer with our game. You know, it's not, say, not just injuries and insurance. Because I've crossed, or I'm in that on the pitch and, you know, almost boardroom type scenario, I've got a foot in both sides. I understand both sides of it quite well. We as well say to players, look, if this is a situation that's happened, yeah, speak to us. We're part of it. We can help, as you know, a lot further than non-members. Obviously there's a time and everything that goes with it, and you know, if you want our help, you know, you have to also be prepared to jump on board what we're doing. But everyone can speak to us for a quick chat and look, go here and do whatever else, you know, this is who you need to speak to, this is what your options are. Just if you value that part, you also have to value, you know, being part of the service, really. But it's no problem to have a chat with people and just explain, look, this is what the rules are, this is what you should be doing, this is what you can do. So go and speak to your club secretary and understand that they can then speak to, you know, league secretary or whatever, and push things, you know, a particular way. We're trying to get across that whole thing of when the league season starts, especially higher up, clubs are sent documentation, as far as I'm aware still, whether it's on email or whatever, but it's like, here's a handbook of, these are some rules, these are, you know, from the FA, whatever the case. Players are supposed to know what these, you know, rules and, you know, requirements are. Doesn't always happen. So then when things go wrong, people start, oh, panic, let's have a look through, you know, whatever the case. I don't have all the rules and regulations to hand. I'm never going to learn all the rules and regulations, but I know where to find them. I know the general framework. I know what to be able to do in a number of cases. Instances where players get abuse and they're saying there's no point reporting it because they don't know what will happen. I can't guarantee that it will get to the result that they want, but I can guarantee, I can show you and tell you what your options are and what you need to be able to do. And if someone tells you, no, that's not going to happen, you know, you can, well, no, you have to make, you know, I can give that kind of information, and that's free to people to use. Drop us an email, give us a phone call. We're there to help. We'll show you the other value which we add, is to say, it's not just injury insurance. There's so many different things which can go with it, which, yeah, we were able to do. A big thing separate is, you know, play around players and agents at that level. You know, there are players who get convinced to pay money to an agent to get them moved to, you know, a Ryman 1 level, or to get promised a trial at that. And there's things like, for me, I'm not criticising agents, because there are many good ones out there, but those who will take money off you before you've even done anything, I'm saying, as a player, just go and speak to a senior player. Speak to us if you want. You know, me and the people we work with, we've played. But even at your club, just go and speak to a senior player. Don't pay money for that and then just turn around and say, well, you can't pay money to protect yourself. I don't say that to just grow my business, but if you don't do it with me, protect yourself somewhere else. Just make sure you're protected. It's the things people choose to put their time and money and effort into which leaves me baffled at times.
When these things happen as well, is there enough emotional support for the players after the event, do you feel?
No, because again, it becomes quite, you're left on your own. So I know this comes across a bit plug our game, our game. But another thing which we have as part of the service is members have access to a 24-hour helpline for counselling and emotional support. And there's also face-to-face counselling sessions available as part of the package. Now, you're not going to necessarily need face-to-face counselling sessions as a result of that, but the extreme is we have that available. And if you, you know, in before that, you just need to be able to talk to someone. You know, our whole thing is to get senior players available to help younger players, have non-league help itself. So once you're in the system, we want to be able to say, well, you've benefited from X, Y, and Z, just pay it forward. You know, pay it forward to the next lot coming through. I started off playing under some old school managers who also had some old school players who would literally put me and a couple of my mates who used to go to clubs with under their wing at the time and helped us to understand this is the kind of thing you should do, this is what you shouldn't do, get involved with that. You know, I think there's a lot of advice which players gave down at the time, and we're just saying to people now, keep doing it. You know, whether a player needs to sit and talk to you after a game because someone has punched him off the ball and you don't know what to do, or someone has said something, you know, whether it's racist or not, or whatever the case may be, you can have someone there to speak to first of all. If you need to go above it, you know, there's players and things you can do. We're here as an organisation to help. It's just helping people to help themselves.
You mentioned your work with the FA. Now, what does that involve?
Just helping around some of the judicial processes, to be honest. So trying to just be a next player perspective and some of the work which they're doing. So it just helps to, you know, change the conversation around it being, you know, the supposed Blazers to people who are now more recently retired and who have still got a, you know, foot in the players' minds these days, just to help bring a bit more perspective to some of the processes. So we're just trying to, it just became an opportunity which I've then looked at as, yeah, this is something which I do want to do. I could either moan with everyone else or try and do a bit to try and help it along. So I'm trying to help it along.
Towards the start and the end of your career, you had really good spells with Dulwich Hamlet. How do you look back on those times?
Really good. Totally different club the second time round. First time round was old school non-league. It was Bill Smith and Dave Garland. Dave Garland had been Palace youth team manager. He had both his sons playing there, Peter and Mark. Good players, especially Peter. Really good player. And we had a good bunch of old school, you know, what I class as old school non-league people in there. And I think we made FA Cup first round or something. We had top few in the league for a while. We it was good times, enjoyed it. Second time round, playing for two of my oldest friends, Gavin Rose especially. I've known him since I was about six. He's one of those players I used to go to a lot of, you know, clubs with. We lived around the corner from each other. Junior caddy, met him in my teenage years, and we've again just been good mates since. Now, their style of football is totally different to the majority. They want to play football. They want, you know, actually get the ball past it. They want to be excited, want to see young players develop. And that's part of their, you know, part of their thing. So to have been a part of that was a change from what I'd started when I was a young player, where it was more defenders defend and just get it forward for everyone else to, you know, to score and do their bit. They demanded a lot more of you. And regardless if you were their mate, they would still demand of you, you know, the same standards to, you know, to achieve what they wanted and in the style they wanted. And as you've seen, the club has gone from strength to strength over the years. I mean, they're good friends of mine, but what they've achieved, I think, has been phenomenal. Club which had 150 odd fans when I played there at the start of the second spell, to now where it's at. They've been part of a great unit. The fans there, the supporters club, the management committee, everyone has played their part to massively transform a club, you know, into something which is, you know, 2,000 odd fans average every week now. Is ridiculous for a non-league football, but it's a community there which also matches what's happening on the pitch. So
could you see that manager stroke coaching Gavin from a young age? Or, I mean, because in his own right, he was a decent player as well, you know, a very good player.
He's a very good player. I think massively underrated. You're going to hear this, maybe. He was managing, though, from a young age. He did a lot of youth work. So where we lived, there was a youth, a community spot, which he'd started from then coaching and managing the kids, giving a lot of mentoring support as well to a lot of the kids. It has not only made a difference, both him and Junior, you know, the whole setup there. It's not just about making a difference to them on the pitch. It's also as young men, you know, trying to change their mindsets around things that they're doing. But before he got his, you know, his chance at senior football, easily 10, 15 years of managing at different, you know, different teams right the way through, getting up after playing himself on a Saturday, maybe going out on a Saturday night to then deal with his team on a Sunday morning and doing the right things by them, investing his time in himself to learn stuff. Cads as well with him all the way. They've you know, together have been, again, that kind of team which has, you know, really, really pushed on. So when people see some of the stuff which they've done with some of the young players, you know, their record of selling people into the Football League, into the professional game, is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And there's a lot of, you know, at times people's comments almost like they've just sprung up and been lucky and, you know, started to, you know, they've just found players. Oh, because where you are, you get all the good players. It's the hard work which has gone in has been phenomenal, and I've taken lessons from them, you know, with kind of what they've done and the way they do things as well. So it's something, if people had known him behind the scenes, they'd have seen, you know, this wouldn't be a surprise, you know, massive surprise to where they've reached now.
How did you know when it was time to stop playing?
I didn't. Gavin chose that for me. no, we. I played at Dulwich at the time. I was ready to play again. I wanted to play again. We just lost that playoff. I think it was Leatherhead was our last one, which we lost. Lost 4-3. Had been 2-0 up. Not much time. I think there wasn't much time to go. Can't remember exactly what it was, but they came back with a ridiculously late comeback. So everyone was gutted. Really thought after the year before we'd lost to Bognor, and then we were ahead for so long in this game. I remember people who'd been to watch the game, who'd left with about 10 minutes to go, thinking it's game over. And they're ringing me later that evening, like, what happened? Because they couldn't understand, you know, the position we'd been to, where we'd lost. But after getting over the disappointment, it was, yeah, let's go again. I want to dare my mates, and I'd drop down a level at the time. I think Kingstone were the Prem at the time. So I dropped down a level to play for them, wanted to help get them up, but didn't happen. And I was ready to go again, but, you know, there was decisions made which they went a different way, which at the time was disappointing, but you also respect the fact that even though your mates, they're doing the job, and they explain it in the right way and, you know, what they needed to do. If I really wanted to carry on playing, yes, I could have. There would have been someone who'd have, you know, given. I did go to a couple training sessions at other clubs, and just the our game stuff was becoming more, you know, more dominant. So did I really want to keep going around and training and doing stuff to play when I had this, which I really still looked at as great opportunity. I've got to put some time into it. Started putting time into it, and football started becoming less, I won't say appealing, but it dropped down, you know, the list. Because really, I just thought, I'm 35, 2 years maybe, you know, left playing, not going to be at a level which I really want to, you know, play at, just because I couldn't do what I used to anymore, definitely. Yeah, so it was more circumstance which led to me stopping rather than an active decision to say, right, that's enough.
On to the quickfire questions then, Francis.
Okay.
I don't know if we've got many to choose from, but best goal you ever scored?
Best goal. I would say against Bognor Regis for Dulwich. I had turned up late because of mad traffic. Literally, they had a kit waiting for me to just get in, to get out. Just about made kickoff, corner, big header, far post, smashed it back across the keeper. Jack Pearce still talks about it now.
Best ground you ever played at?
Crawley Town. We went there when they just built the new ground. It was superb. Played for Billy Smith there at the time, and it was our home ground, obviously, playing there, but everything about it was, you know, brand new football league, and it was just ridiculous. It really, the pitch, the facilities inside, everything was just first class.
If you could give the 18-year-old Francis Duku one bit of advice now, what would it be?
Now it would have been to have stayed at Maidenhead under Alan Devonshire. I left him at the age of 18. I think I went to Crawley. So I went to Crawley first time at 19. I'd had a really good year with him there. Played with Tony Gale there at the time as well. He just won the Premier League with Blackburn. I learnt loads and loads. But Crawley was a more glamorous club, I suppose, at the time, higher level, and I thought, I want to push on and keep, you know, testing myself, seeing what Dev has done with players since. Hindsight would have been to stay there. I think if Tony Gale had carried on playing, I would have stayed, but the choice was stay there or take the chance at that higher level in this new facility and everything. And I chose that rather than stay and continue learning under him. I did learn elsewhere, you know, with Bill Smith at Crawley, without a doubt, but yeah, I just stayed there.
Did a few tours with Middlesex Wanderers. What was the best place you visited?
Japan. We did Japan, I think, in 05. Spent 10 days there, played some good teams. I think we played their under 23 team. Got terrorised, absolutely terrorised. But facilities, everything about it. We played in some of the World Cup stadium, went all around and were treated really, really well. Other than that, Indonesia and Vietnam, we went to as well. They've taken me to a lot of places, which, you know, is a kind of a awareness for them. But if you get asked to play for the Middlesex Wanderers, you'd be mad not to. It's football, but you get to see different parts of the world and to enjoy it massively as well. You know, you're not there just training and playing. You're there to bond, meet people and experience another side of the world.
Which centre forward was the most difficult to deal with?
The one who sticks out most, I think we just talked about him though, was Neil Gregory at Canvey. He wasn't athletic, but he knew how to play. He knew what he was doing. I think I remember after the game where they beat us 1-0, I remember Jeff King going in the paper and talking about how he taught me a lesson. And I just really wanted to play against him again after that. But yeah, he was really, really, really tricky. Just because he knew he's a good player, great touch, and just put you where he wanted to. I also remember playing against Daryl Clare when he was at Boston. Played with Adie Penick alongside me that day, and in the first half, Daryl Clare gave me an absolute torrid. Remember getting in at half-time, Adie not far short of, I won't say pinned me up against the wall, still bigger than him, but kind of just got into me properly, and much better second half, but that first half was yeah, he turned me inside out just by running, let alone with the ball. So yeah,
Francis, time has beaten us again. Thanks so much for coming in. We really enjoyed your stories and looking back over your career, as well as looking forward with our game, and we wish you every success with that project and hope it goes from strength to strength.
Can I whack one last thing in there? So just in terms of what we're doing for clubs for this season, we're just saying to clubs as well, get in touch, either email us info@ourgamefootball.com, or can give us a call. Website's ourgamefootball.com as well. And we're just things like, if you know of a club who should be listening, do with our help, get in touch. We've got 50 copies of Football Manager 19 to give away. So you just give us a good referral, you know, for we'll follow up with the work. But we're just trying to, we've got stuff which comes in, which we get in, we just want to give out, you know, but you help us, we help you kind of thing. So just a cheeky plug to help with the business growth, but just let people see more about what we do.
Yeah, we should add there's actually only 48 copies of Football Manager left as well now.
Oh, me
and Steve, would you take it to? Francis, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the KM Football Podcast. Click subscribe at Audio Boom and iTunes and keep up to date with the latest stories at kentonline.co.uk.